Welcome to the Kingdom Reformation Podcast with Glenn Blakeney. Here, the fire of revival ignites hearts and fuels a supernatural move of God throughout the nations of the earth. Join us each week for prophetic insights, apostolic teaching, and powerful conversations that will equip you to live fully awakened in your kingdom purpose. This is more than a podcast. It's a movement. Learn more about us by visiting kingdomreformation.org. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome, everyone, to The Deep Dive. You know, we're living in this age where information just comes at you from everywhere,
right? Oh, absolutely. Screens, the internet, articles, research, even just our own notes piling up.
Exactly. It's so easy to feel, well, completely overwhelmed. You click one thing, suddenly you have 10 tabs open.
And you're not really absorbing any of it, just sort of skimming the surface, drowning in data, basically. It's
exactly. But what if there was a shortcut? You know, a way to actually cut through all that noise.
Like get to the core insights, the stuff that really matters.
Precisely. A way to become genuinely well-informed, quickly, effectively, without that feeling of drowning.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
Well, that, my friends, is exactly what The Deep Dive is all about. We're here as your guides.
Taking a stack of sources tailored specifically for you, the listener.
Uh-huh. And distilling it. Finding those essential nuggets, those aha moments.
And hopefully keeping it interesting along the way, right? With some surprising facts and, you know, genuine curiosity.
Absolutely. So today we're diving deep into a topic many people feel they know well. Prayer.
Okay. But I have a feeling we're not talking about just any kind of prayer.
Not at all. We're specifically exploring a pretty radical concept of prayer. It's based on this incredibly insightful article by Glenn Blakeney.
Ah, Glenn Blakeney. I've come across his work. Very thoughtful stuff.
Definitely. The article is called Wrestling Until Heaven Breaks Through, and you can find it on kingdomreformation.org.
Wrestling Until Heaven Breaks Through. Wow. Okay. That title alone tells you this isn't going to be standard fare.
Right. And we really want to emphasize, you know, The Deep Dive explores different perspectives. Today is about understanding the unique insights from this source.
So we're not necessarily endorsing every aspect, but really unpacking what Blakeney is presenting here.
Exactly. And Glenn's perspective, it's challenging.
Yeah.
Deeply empowering for some, I imagine. He reveals this form of prayer that he suggests very few people practice in its true radical form.
Prayer as few practice it. That's intriguing.
It really is. And by the way, this deep dive is brought to you by Awake Nations and the Kingdom Reformation community.
Good to know.
So our mission today, basically, is to help you reframe how you might think about intercession.
Moving it beyond, say, a polite spiritual habit.
Way beyond. Seeing it as this dynamic, potent force. Blakeney uses the word wrestling, a force capable of shaping destinies, influencing every part of life.
Okay, wrestling. That's a powerful image.
Yeah.
Shaping destinies, influencing every sphere. This sounds big.
It is. So, yeah, prepare for maybe some aha moments, maybe some surprising angles on a practice you thought you knew inside out.
All right, I'm ready. Let's get into it.
Okay, so this core idea, wrestling. Let's unpack that. It immediately hits differently than how we usually think about prayer, doesn't it?
Completely. You know, quiet contemplation, gentle conversation, maybe softly spoken requests. That's the common picture.
But Glenn Blakeney kicks off his article with this verse from Colossians 4:12.
Yeah.
And reading it, it really, it grabs you.
Which verse is that?
It says, "He is always wrestling in prayer for you, that you may stand firm in all the will of God, mature and fully assured."
Okay, wrestling in prayer, right there in the text. And it's talking about Epaphras.
Yes, exactly. And what's fascinating, as you said, is the description of Epaphras. Maybe not a household name like Paul or Peter.
Right. Less known, perhaps.
But the focus isn't on his public speaking or his visible work. It's on this private, persistent, and, well, really strenuous prayer life.
And Blakeney really zooms in on that word wrestling. He's saying it's not just a casual synonym for praying.
Not at all. He says it's the core of this transformative idea he's bringing out. It's a world away from just a gentle, passive request.
That contrast is key, isn't it? Not casual conversation, not comfortable requests. It's active. It's intense engagement.
And then Blakeney dives straight into the Greek word behind wrestling.
The original language. Always revealing.
It is. The word is agonizomai. Now, even if you're not a Greek scholar, you can probably hear our English word in there. Exactly. Agonize. And when you connect that word to prayer, wow. It changes the whole picture, doesn't it?
It really does. What does Blakeney say agonizomai really implies here?
He argues it fundamentally reshapes how we should understand it. You know, when we agonize over something in English, it's deep struggle, right?
It's intense emotional effort, maybe even physical strain, a desperate, sustained effort.
So applying that to prayer, as Blakeney does, means we're talking about serious spiritual labor.
Like straining against something unseen, holding on tight until something shifts.
That's the idea. Refusing to let go until something breaks through in the spiritual realm. He uses the analogy of a wrestler in a ring.
Locked in a grapple, totally committed, pushing, overcoming, even to the point of exhaustion, until the opponent yields.
Yes, that's the kind of intensity he's suggesting is implied by agonizomai.
So prayer, in this view, isn't just asking nicely and moving on. It's exerting real spiritual force.
Persistently, unyieldingly, until the desired outcome manifests, spiritually speaking.
Wow, that is a very different model of prayer.
And here's another layer. The article points out that Epaphras was always wrestling. Always.
Not just sometimes, not just when things got really bad.
Nope. According to Blakeney's reading, it was his consistent lifestyle. It was fundamental to how he operated.
Okay, always wrestling. That shifts things again. How does that change prayer from just an activity into something more foundational?
Well, if you connect it to Blakeney's overall perspective, the implication is huge. Prayer stops being a task you schedule.
Like 10 minutes in the morning, check the box.
Exactly. Instead, it becomes like the atmosphere you live and breathe in. Continuous state of spiritual readiness and engagement.
That's a profound shift. It's not what you do, but how you are.
And Blakeney points out what Epaphras was wrestling for. It wasn't small stuff.
Not just daily needs or comfort.
No. He was wrestling for spiritual maturity, for divine assurance, for people to stand firm in God's will. Really high stakes outcomes.
That contrasts sharply with a lot of common prayers today, doesn't it? Often focused on ease or comfort or convenience.
Absolutely. Epaphras, in this view, was aiming for deep, fundamental spiritual transformation in others, what Blakeney calls spiritual formation.
Not just fixing immediate problems, but building lasting spiritual character, a deep commitment to others' spiritual journey.
Well, it's a powerful contrast, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from comfort to formation. And this leads into something Blakeney observes about modern prayer that really, it really made me stop and think.
What's that?
He suggests we've sanitized prayer. That's his word. Sanitized it.
Sanitized. Meaning what? Like made it too clean, too polite.
Exactly. He argues we've turned this powerful weapon, as he calls it, into polite spirituality.
Wow. Trading, wrestling for wishing, contending for comfortable requests. That's quite a statement.
It is. And it begs the question, from Blakeney's perspective, what has this sanitization cost us?
Well, if prayer is meant to be a powerful weapon and we've made it merely polite, it sounds like we've essentially disarmed ourselves.
Yeah, that's how he puts it. He argues it's fundamentally defanged prayer. We've traded potentially dramatic breakthroughs for comfortable, passive routines.
And lost the potency that comes from that genuine, maybe uncomfortable spiritual labor.
That's the idea. He suggests the cost is significant. When prayer becomes just polite, it loses its transformative edge.
We avoid the raw, maybe desperate, agonizing engagement that this wrestling demands.
And the result, Blakeney suggests, might be fewer tangible divine interventions in our lives, in the world.
Not because God isn't willing, perhaps, but because we haven't done the intense spiritual work needed to see them happen.
That's his perspective. It can lead to this passive spirituality that's okay with just maintaining religious routines.
Instead of actively contending for real divine influence in the world.
Yeah. He basically says we've swapped a battleground for an armchair.
And you don't win battles from an armchair. That's a strong image.
It really is. And it connects directly to what Blakeney says he's witnessed.
Yeah.
What happens when believers get desperate enough to actually fight in prayer?
Okay, fight in prayer. Again, strong language. Moving beyond routines.
Yes. Moving beyond just maintaining religious routines to actually multiplying kingdom influence through genuine intercession.
So this isn't just about feeling more pious. It's about tangible world-changing outcomes, in his view.
Exactly. It implies this deep hunger, this refusal to accept things as they are, an active pursuit of what he calls divine influence.
Can you unpack that phrase a bit more? Multiplying kingdom influence. What does that look like from Blakeney's perspective?
He seems to mean seeing the principles and purposes he attributes to God becoming more evident, more impactful in the real world.
So beyond just individual spirituality,
yeah,
affecting society.
Yeah, spinning outwards. When people fight in prayer, it moves them from just thinking about divine power to actively applying it.
And this fighting, it's not aggression towards people, right?
No, definitely not. It's an intense, focused resistance against what he sees as spiritual opposition, a relentless push against spiritual inertia or complacency.
Born from desperation, recognizing the stakes are high.
Exactly. When polite requests just don't seem adequate for what he calls entrenched spiritual strongholds.
Which could be deeply rooted negative patterns.
Yeah.
In individuals or society. Things that oppose what he sees as God's will.
That seems to be the idea. It's a refusal to settle for less than God's full intention, as Blakeney understands it.
Okay, that deepens the understanding of fighting in this context.
And this idea of intense spiritual labor, it's not just Epaphras. Blakeney brings in the Apostle Paul.
How so?
He points to Galatians 4:19. Paul uses this incredibly powerful analogy there.
Let me guess. Something intense.
You got it. Paul describes himself as being in the pains of childbirth until Christ is formed in you.
Wow. The pains of childbirth? That is definitely not polite or comfortable.
Not at all. It's a profound struggle. Often excruciating.
Yep.
Painful, but purposeful.
Bringing forth new life.
Exactly. So what does Blakeney emphasize by connecting prayer or intercession specifically to those pains?
Well, the Greek word Paul uses there, budin, Blakeney points out it means literal labor pains.
Yeah.
Birth trauma, even.
So not just a metaphor for feeling a bit stressed, it's serious, profound struggle.
Exactly. And so Blakeney suggests that intercession, seen this way, is like spiritual midwifery.
Spiritual midwifery. Okay, explain that.
It elevates intercession way beyond just making requests. It becomes a crucial role in actually bringing forth new spiritual life, new divine purpose.
Like travailing, struggling, until Christ's character is formed in people, until destinies are birthed, until breakthrough happens.
That's the picture he paints. Think about childbirth. The pain, yes, but also the push, the sheer perseverance needed.
And then the incredible joy when new life finally emerges.
Right. That whole process mirrors, in Blakeney's view, what happens in deep intercession. It demands everything, but the outcome is seen as incomparably valuable.
That connection, spiritual midwifery.
Yeah.
It really brings the concept of wrestling to life in a new way. Makes it very visceral.
It does. And it leads perfectly into Glenn Blakeney's personal story.
Ah, yes. This part of the article, for me, really grounded the whole idea, moved it from theory to, well, reality.
What happened?
He shares about a close friend from his youth group days. During college, this friend started drifting, pulling away spiritually.
Something many people can probably relate to seeing happen.
Totally. And Glenn felt this profound helplessness. He said, "My words seemed powerless against whatever was pulling them away."
That feeling of your best efforts just not being enough. It's tough.
And that vulnerability, I think, makes the story so powerful. It shows where human effort hits a wall.
Leading to that desperation he mentioned earlier, the kind that compels a different kind of engagement.
Precisely. He says this desperation just overwhelmed him one night. He went into his room, shut the door. And for over 3 hours, he experienced something totally new for him. He wasn't just listing requests.
He was
wrestling.
In his words, yes.
Yeah.
Wrestling with God over my friend's soul. He describes his heart breaking, his body getting exhausted.
But he kept going.
He said he refused to let go until something broke in the spiritual realm.
Wow. That is agonizomai lived out, isn't it? Not just a word, but a grueling, demanding experience. Absolutely. For someone listening, though, who might find that idea of agonizing prayer maybe intimidating or confusing, how does that intensity fit with prayer also being about peace or connection?
That's a really important question, and I think Blakeney's story implicitly addresses it. The act of wrestling might be intense, agonizing even.
Right, because you're pushing against something, engaging spiritual opposition, as he sees it.
Exactly. It's not a struggle against God, in his view, but a struggle with God against opposition until alignment is reached and obstacles removed.
So the intensity comes from the engagement, the spiritual exertion.
Yes. Much like an athlete might agonize during a race, but find peace and satisfaction at the finish line, the outcome of the wrestling is often peace, clarity, breakthrough.
A peace earned through perseverance, not by avoiding the struggle.
Precisely. Glenn's story shows that. The exhaustion, the breaking heart, the refusal to quit, signs of profound effort, but leading to a resolution.
It shows that, in his view, certain kinds of change require that level of intense, unyielding engagement.
Followed by peace when the breakthrough comes.
And did it come? What was the outcome for his friend?
According to Blakeney, the response was swift and sovereign. He says, within days, God moved sovereignly.
Wow, days.
His friend had some kind of encounter that completely turned their life around, changed their whole trajectory.
And the result lasted.
Apparently so. Blakeney writes, they're serving in ministry today because someone wrestled for their destiny in a prayer room.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Life completely redirected. Not a small thing.
Not at all. And this experience, he says, marked him forever.
It taught him a profound lesson, didn't it?
Yes. That certain breakthroughs only come through spiritual violence, through refusing to accept the status quo and contending until heaven responds.
Okay. Spiritual violence. We need to unpack that term carefully. He's clearly not talking about physical aggression.
Absolutely not. It's crucial to understand that. It refers to that unyielding, intense spiritual exertion we've been discussing.
Confronting spiritual opposition, bringing about change through focused spiritual effort.
Exactly. It implies courage, unwavering resolve, refusing to accept things as they are when you believe they are contrary to divine will. It's an active, even assertive spiritual posture.
So for someone maybe unfamiliar with this framework, what might that spiritual opposition look like? Is it always the demons?
Not necessarily, or at least not always personalized like that in every context Blakeney might imply. It can refer more broadly to unseen forces or influences believed to hinder good things, resist positive change, or perpetuate negativity or injustice.
Like pervasive mindsets, patterns of destructive behavior, systemic issues.
Could be. So spiritual violence is the intense spiritual effort, prayer, focused intention, unwavering will used to counteract those forces.
A pushback against perceived spiritual resistance, aiming for a divine outcome.
Yes, a kind of holy tenacity, a refusal to be deterred by delays or how things look on the surface.
That clarification is really helpful. It's about spiritual intensity, not physical harm.
Precisely.
And this whole experience led Blakeney to another big realization. Prayer transcends church walls.
Meaning it's not just for Sundays or prayer meetings.
Right. He argues that intercession, understood as this kind of spiritual warfare, needs warriors people practicing it in every sphere of influence.
Okay, so moving beyond personal devotion, beyond church gatherings, into all of life.
Yes. It challenges that limited view.
Yeah.
He's saying every aspect of life, every area of human activity is a place where spiritual dynamics are at play.
And therefore, a place where this kind of focused intercession is vital.
That's his argument. It's a call to apply this understanding everywhere. Business, family, education, government, arts. Everywhere.
That really broadens the scope, doesn't it? Seeing the spiritual dimension impacting everything.
It does. So let's get into the specific spheres he mentions, because they really illustrate this broad application. First up, ministry in churches.
Okay, seems like an obvious place for prayer, but how does he frame it with this wrestling idea?
He makes a pretty stark claim. Vision dies without prayer covering.
Wow.
Dies. Yeah. And he says he's seen too many ministries collapse because leaders attempted to build without intercession.
So it's not just helpful, it's essential for survival and effectiveness.
That's his view. He stresses that effective ministry needs people laboring behind the scenes, not just praying for general success.
Well, that's specifically for protection, clarity, spiritual endurance for the leaders and teams.
Exactly. It underscores that intercession isn't just an optional extra for an organization. It's foundational.
Like that invisible scaffolding analogy you used earlier, holding things together, protecting against unseen pressures.
Precisely. It's a sobering thought for anyone leading anything with a mission. What you do is important, but what's contended for behind the scenes is, in his view, just as critical.
Okay, that makes sense for ministry, but then he takes it somewhere maybe more unexpected for some.
Right. Business in the marketplace. This is where he really challenges common thinking.
What does he say?
He states flatly, if you believe prayer is spiritual activity that doesn't belong in professional settings, you're missing divine strategy.
Boom. Directly challenging that sacred secular divide. The idea that work is work and faith is faith, and they don't mix.
Clearly. He argues that interceding for employees, projects, clients, even ethical decisions.
Mm.
It's not just some religious ritual tacked on.
It's what? Inviting divine wisdom.
Yes, inviting divine wisdom into choices that shape destinies. Seeing the marketplace as a sphere where divine influence is needed and can be sought.
Okay, let's make that more concrete. Say you have a startup facing really tough competition, or you're launching a product that feels super risky. How would this wrestling apply there?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily mean holding prayer meetings with your competitors.
Right, probably not.
But internally, the founder or leaders might consistently wrestle in prayer. maybe for specific breakthroughs in the market, for unique innovations, for favor in crucial deals.
Or for wisdom in navigating the risks of that product launch, praying over supply chains, marketing, timing.
Exactly. Inviting what Blakeney calls divine wisdom into every practical decision, believing it can help avoid pitfalls and spot opportunities.
So it's both an internal posture of reliance and a belief that this posture, through persistent prayer, can actually influence external events and outcomes.
That's the idea. Pushing against economic challenges or unseen obstacles, aiming for ethical success, aligning profit with purpose, seeing business challenges as spiritual frontiers.
That is a radical reframing of work for many people.
Ability. And then there's a sphere that touches everyone, families and homes.
Okay, what's his perspective here?
He observes that families face unprecedented spiritual assault. That's strong language again.
Assault. What does he mean by that?
He suggests that forces opposing what he sees as divine good wage war with strategic precision against children, against marriages, against generational legacies.
That sounds pretty intense, but does he offer a defense?
He does. Hope. He says, when parents learn to truly intercede, they build spiritual hedges and shape the identity of their household.
Spiritual hedges, like a protective barrier.
Exactly. An invisible spiritual fortress built through prayer.
So how can parents, who are often already overwhelmed, practically engage in this spiritual hedging day to day?
It might mean being very specific, not just praying for your kids' safety, but wrestling against specific negative influences you see or sense, praying for their character, their destiny.
Dedicating specific time, praying over each family member by name.
Could be. Contending for unity in marriage, for resilience against stress, establishing a spiritual atmosphere at home, maybe through worship, scripture, regular family prayer times, even brief ones.
So even a few minutes of focused, intense intercession, believing it builds that hedge, could be powerful from his viewpoint.
That's the implication. It's a deliberate act of shaping the spiritual environment for the family's protection and flourishing.
Active vigilance, not passive hope.
Right. And Blakeney ties all these spheres back to that need for persistence, quoting Hosea 10.1.1 again.
It is time to seek the Lord until he comes and showers his righteousness on you.
That phrase, until he comes.
Yeah.
It really drives home the relentless commitment required, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Blakeney emphasizes it's not about praying until we feel better or until things instantly change.
It's about persisting until there's a tangible manifestation. Until God, in his words, manifests his presence and brings his intended outcome.
Exactly. It's focused on his manifestation, not necessarily our immediate comfort. It implies a deep conviction that consistent, intense seeking will eventually yield that divine intervention, that righteousness, that order.
Aligning our will with what we believe is his, and then contending for that reality, no matter how long it takes.
A profound level of commitment.
So if this is the kind of intercession Blakeney is advocating, deep, persistent sphere influencing, how do we actually cultivate that?
Right. How do we make this the norm, not the exception, in our churches, families, organizations?
He's very clear. Creating breakthrough requires more than hoping people will pray. That's not enough.
It needs intentionality, structure.
Yes. He says you have to embed intercession into the DNA of whatever you lead. Make it foundational, not just a nice supplement.
Woven into the fabric of how things operate, not just an add-on for crises.
Exactly. This means regularly teaching about it, the why and the how. Helping people grasp its importance and power.
And valuing the people who do it.
Critically. He says, honor intercessors as essential team members, not spiritual extras. Elevate their role. See it as vital, like finance or operations.
Shifting the mindset from prayer as passive to prayer as an active strategic contribution.
And he gets super practical here. For organizations, he recommends assigning a prayer coordinator.
A specific person whose main job is mobilizing this kind of intercession.
Yep. He says, what gets assigned receives attention. It puts structure around something often left to chance or individual initiative.
That makes sense. A dedicated role ensures it's prioritized, organized, consistently pushed forward.
Prevents it from being overlooked. This coordinator identifies needs, communicates them, ensures coverage across different areas.
And supports the intercessors themselves. Gives them leadership, purpose.
Right. Fosters consistency and depth. It's basically an operational structure for a spiritual priority.
Okay, so dedicated roles. What else?
Creating sacred environments for engagement.
Physical spaces.
Yes. Designating spaces specifically for encountering God's presence, like prayer rooms.
Equipped with things to help focus, worship music, scripture, journals maybe?
Exactly. The idea is that a physical space, intentionally set apart, helps people step away from distractions and engage more deeply.
Minimizes external noise, maximizes internal focus, creates a container for that spiritual intensity.
That's the concept. It signals that this activity is important, set apart.
Makes sense in our noisy world.
And it's not just physical rooms, but also how meetings begin.
Ah, yes, you mentioned this earlier, starting with focused intercession.
Yes, focused intercession, not casual blessing requests. The goal: set the spiritual atmosphere before addressing natural concerns.
That really flips the script on typical meetings, doesn't it? Spiritual agenda first, practical agenda second.
Totally. It's a paradigm shift. It acknowledges, from this viewpoint, that human strategy alone isn't enough.
It invites divine wisdom and guidance into the whole process from the very beginning.
That's the aim. It subtly trains everyone to view their work through a spiritual lens, integrating purpose.
Okay, roles, spaces, meeting structures.
Mm-hmm.
What about skills? Does he address training?
He does. He points out a major gap. Most believers lack training in effective intercession.
So good intentions aren't enough. You need know-how.
That's his point. Just like you train soldiers, he argues we need to equip people for what he calls spiritual warfare.
So hosting workshops, specialized training.
Exactly. Workshops on spiritual warfare itself, understanding the unseen realm, on prophetic prayer, learning to discern and pray God's specific will for a situation, in his view.
And praying God's word, not just personal preferences.
Right. Aligning prayers with divine promises and purposes, moving beyond vague wishes to powerful, targeted petitions.
Building competence and confidence, turning well-meaning people into trained, strategic intercessors.
That's the goal. And he suggests organizing these trained people into teams.
Teams focused on specific areas, like youth or finances or community issues.
Yes. Teams assigned to specific spheres, based on burden or gifting. This allows for deeper, more targeted prayer.
And providing support for these teams. Mentorship. Accountability.
Crucial, he says. Mentorship provides guidance. Accountability ensures consistency and shared responsibility. It prevents burnout and isolation in what can be intense work.
Specialization plus support equals greater impact. Makes sense.
And in our connected world, he doesn't ignore technology.
How does tech fit into this intense, often personal form of prayer?
He talks about leveraging available technology strategically, using digital platforms to network prayer.
Like group messaging for urgent needs.
Yes, but also more proactively. Digital prayer guides, intercession calendars to keep everyone aligned.
Live prayer meetings online, connecting people globally.
Absolutely. Technology removes geographical barriers. Imagine a community spread across cities.
How could they use, say, group messaging to build that consistent wrestling culture?
Well, the prayer coordinator could send out daily or weekly focus points via a secure app. Members respond with scriptures, insights, commit to pray at certain times.
Creating a shared, ongoing conversation and focus, even when apart.
Exactly. Digital guides ensure unified, systematic coverage. Video meetings foster community. It means an intercessory network can be mobilized instantly, globally.
Amplifying reach and coordination in ways that weren't possible before.
Right. He even mentions specific apps, Echo Prayer, Prayer Mate, Bless Every Home, as practical tools to explore.
Good to have concrete suggestions.
Another really vital piece he emphasizes is documenting and celebrating victories.
Keeping records of answered prayers. Why is that so important?
Because, as he puts it, faith multiplies when we witness God's consistent response to persistent prayer.
Ah, so it provides tangible proof.
The encouragement.
Yes, it shows that prayer, in this view, isn't just abstract. It yields real results. These records become anchors in times of doubt, sharing testimonies in meetings, newsletters, prayer walls, physical or digital.
All of that. It builds a collective history of perceived divine faithfulness, inspiring others to press in deeper. Fosters a culture of expectation.
Turns belief into experience. Strengthens everyone's conviction.
Makes sense. Then there's ensuring nothing gets missed. Ensuring complete coverage.
Like a safety net, making sure every person, every department, every area is covered.
Exactly. He suggests assigning prayer liaisons for key leaders, major events, big decisions.
Like that invisible spiritual security detail we talked about.
Perfect analogy. It's about holistic coverage, leaving no areas spiritually vulnerable or unsupported. Proactive engagement, not just reactive crisis management.
Comprehensive spiritual foresight.
And crucially, looking to the future, involving the next generation.
Getting kids involved? How?
Including them in family prayer times? training them perhaps using family prayer journals, maybe reviewing them together weekly?
Normalizing this kind of prayer from a young age, making it part of their spiritual DNA.
That's the goal. It demystifies it, makes it natural. The journals help them track prayers, see answers, build their own faith incrementally.
Like praying for a sick pet and seeing it recover.
Could be simple things like that. It ensures this practice isn't lost but passed down, creating a legacy of people who understand and use their perceived spiritual authority.
Building a sustainable culture, generationally.
Finally, he circles back to normalizing persistent intercession, reminding us it often takes sustained effort.
Back to the farmer analogy from Hosea.
Yes. Like the farmer, we break up fallow ground and sow in faith. It's methodical, long-term work, not a quick fix.
What does breaking up fallow ground mean spiritually?
It refers to tackling areas in a life, a situation, a community that have become hardened, spiritually unproductive, neglected, like an overgrown, uncultivated field.
So confronting resistance, removing obstacles, creating openness for breakthrough.
That's the idea. And the wrestling in prayer is that work. The consistent, sometimes hard labor of tilling that spiritual ground, clearing out weeds of doubt or opposition, sowing seeds of faith.
So spiritual results might not be instant.
But they're guaranteed to the persistent, in his view. It teaches patience, diligence, unwavering commitment, even without immediate signs.
It's not praying once and hoping for the best.
No, it's refusing to quit until you see that transformation that Christ formed in others, as Blakeney puts it, a complete change, a profound commitment to seeing it through.
Wow. That really lands the persistence aspect.
So putting it all together, it's clear Blakeney sees intercession not as just a role you play on Sunday.
But a whole lifestyle, flowing from compassion, from a deep hunger to see change.
Exactly. Flowing from what he calls divine compassion and desperate hunger to see God's will established on earth.
And he turns it back to the listener, doesn't he?
He does. He poses those direct questions. Who is God calling you to wrestle for today? Where do you see spiritual fallow ground needing that rain of intercession?
An invitation to look around our own lives, our relationships, workplaces, communities, and identify where this intense engagement might be needed.
Yes. To move from just observing problems to actively engaging them through this kind of prayer.
Allowing those burdens we feel to become assignments, invitations to wrestle.
And embracing that role of intercessor daily, not just occasionally. Living with an attuned ear, ready to engage.
A readiness for deep spiritual labor.
And he acknowledges the nature of this work. He highlights this paradox. Intercessory prayer lacks glamour, but carries glory. It's often hidden from human view, yet never unnoticed in heaven.
That's a powerful contrast to worldly values, isn't it? Where visibility and recognition are everything.
Completely. The hidden work, the hours in prayer, the secret tears, the unseen battles, that's what hold immense weight and value in the spiritual realm, according to him.
A reminder that true significance in this framework isn't about public praise, but faithful hidden labor.
Right. He says God is looking for modern epiphrases, people who will agonize in secret places so others can stand firm in divine purpose.
People who refuse to quit when breakthrough seems slow, who understand that some victories require that intense spiritual exertion, that spiritual violence.
Exactly. And this leads to his final, really empowering statement about identity.
What's that?
He says, because Jesus didn't die to create prayer warriors. He died to raise sons and daughters who understand their authority and refuse to shrink from using it.
Wow. So it's not just about doing the work of prayer, but understanding who you are as you pray.
Precisely. Blakeney's framework suggests that the authority to wrestle effectively comes from understanding your identity in relation to the divine.
Not praying from weakness or begging, but operating from a place of delegated authority, co-laboring with divine power.
Yes. When people grasp that identity, he believes, prayer shifts from desperation to empowered decree, a refusal to concede ground spiritually.
Praying with confidence and purpose because of who you believe you are.
A fundamental reframing. And so Blakeney extends this invitation to everyone listening.
What's the invitation?
Sow in righteousness. Seek the Lord until his reign comes. Pray with unwavering persistence until you witness Christ formed in others.
A powerful call to action. A challenge to embrace this deeper, more demanding form of prayer.
Absolutely. So just to recap our deep dive today, we've explored prayer, but maybe not as you've always thought of it.
Focusing on Glenn Blakeney's perspective of prayer as few practice it.
Right. Unpacking his idea based on his article, Wrestling Until Heaven Breaks Through, of prayer as this radical, powerful, transformative force.
Moving beyond polite requests to an agonizing, persistent lifestyle of wrestling for breakthrough.
In every area of life, families, businesses, ministries, communities, everywhere.
It's a demanding vision, but one he presents as incredibly impactful.
Definitely. And as you think about all this, here's a final thought to maybe mull over.
Okay.
If the most impactful spiritual work, in Blakeney's view, often happens in hidden places, what secret place breakthroughs might be waiting for your persistent engagement?
A personal challenge, a relationship, a goal. Where might that focused effort make a difference?
Something to consider. And Glenn Blakeney, by the way, genuinely wants to hear from you. He invites testimonies.
Stories of how people have personally seen this kind of intercessory prayer bring transformation.
Exactly. In your own life, family, community, workplace. From this perspective, he believes sharing your story, your breakthrough, could inspire someone else to press deeper.
That's a great invitation for connection.
It is. And remember Blakeney's core message here. We weren't called just to maintain the spiritual status quo.
But born to multiply what he calls kingdom influence through this kind of intercession.
Yes. And that multiplication happens, he argues, when we learn to wrestle until heaven breaks through.
A challenging but potentially world-changing perspective.
Indeed. This deep dive was brought to you by Awake Nations and the Kingdom Reformation Community.
And if you want to explore these ideas further or connect with others committed to this,
you can subscribe today at kingdomreformation.org. There's a community there exploring these principles.
Kingdomreformation.org. Got it.
And if you are impacted by this teaching and think it would benefit your own organization, church, or event,
you can invite Glenn Blakeney himself.
Absolutely. We wholeheartedly encourage you to invite Glenn Blakeney to speak, whether it's online or in person.
Great. So opportunities to learn more and engage directly.
Definitely. Thank you all so much for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Look forward to the next one.
Hey, everyone. Glenn Blakeney here. Are you passionate about revival and reformation? Do you want to deepen your understanding of fivefold ministry and how to advance the kingdom in every sphere of life, including the marketplace? Well, then join the Kingdom Reformation Leaders Community today. We offer a free subscription to get you started, as well as a monthly plan that provides valuable content and insights. For those seeking even more, our Leaders Plan includes all-inclusive access to a wealth of resources focused on church leadership, apostolic movements, prophetic ministry, and much more. You can engage in live sessions and discussions that explore how to effectively implement these principles in your life and community. With our monthly leaders training featuring esteemed kingdom leaders from around the globe, you'll be equipped to make a transformative impact. Don't miss this chance to grow in your calling and to contribute to the movement of revival and reformation, advancing the kingdom of God to cities and nations. Sign up for the Leaders Plan or any other subscription at kingdomreformation.org today.